Okay, great. We're all set to go. A handful of us here, and I'm sure a couple more will join. I'm sure a couple won't also be here as well. So we won't have all eight of us here, but that's okay. So today we're doing the Southmoon Ruler by Sign. And what this does, Southmoon Ruler by Sign, is as the third step in this process, it tells us about an individual's sense of karmic identity. So step one would be Pluto, and it's that thing that the person feels he or she has to do, and then also the thing that might be very difficult to do, might bring up a lot of fears. And then the second step, South Node by Sign, you know, South Node itself, would be the kind of environment in which this person is trained how to be a human, because every soul is a blank slate, you know, babies are clueless, so they have to be trained. So the soul picks a kind of environment, and that's how we end up seeing the world and how we prefer to be. And then that is third step, the South Node Ruler by Sign, tells us about a person's role in that conditioning environment. So it works in terms of how that person will show up in the family. And there's this whole thing about the South Node Ruler. It's a role that you inhabit, but you might do it unconsciously or intentionally, but you might not do it right away, and other people might appoint you to do it. So that's a very important distinction, that sometimes it's intentional, sometimes not intentional. But a person tends to blossom in that role, whether they knew they would or not. And we can talk about some examples as we go. So I sent a handout, a PDF, which is some basic notes on the South Node Ruler. And, yeah, so I'm going to run through these 5 points at the top. Just read to you like you're 5 years old. Wherever you see the South Node Ruler, know that a person in this life and many others shows up as this sort of person. It's a layer of identity beyond and behind sun, moon, and ascendant. And you might actually encounter people who say, you know, sun's in Aries. I don't feel like an Aries. A person might say, I don't feel fiery at all. Well, the South Node Ruler might be in Pisces. And that might explain this layer of identity that the person just feels he or she is. Number two, the house represents a part of life in which the person is most interested. And the sign is the preferred way of being as well as motivation. Number three, what I said earlier, if we don't seek out, you know, being that South Node Ruler, then we're often appointed to it by others who see it in us. Number four, we can be successful living out this symbolism, but we always need to correct some beliefs. Because just because we're comfortable identifying this way doesn't mean that when we do this, our heads are screwed on straight. So, you know, it's not just that it's comfortable, it's that it also can use some course correction, just like the Pluto and the South Node stuff. And then the fifth one, it's always good to upgrade our experience of this. So, you know, as you're talking to somebody and you're looking at all these things and saying, oh, the third step, South Node Ruler by Sign, there's this person and there's this level of identity. You know, let's just say it's Aries' second house. You know, being bold about skills would just be a generic way of looking at this. But you're talking to this person. This person could be completely overconfident in what he or she can do. So obviously, a course correction would be more realism about the second house stuff and less boisterousness or less, maybe Aries in a different way. Maybe instinctive instead of, you know, boisterous or something. So anyway, so we can always upgrade stuff with this. And I've altered the third column of the table here. It's the same, obviously, the houses and then the life area. I kept the same keyword or keywords. And we'll be referencing this in the same way that we have done the other tables in previous weeks. But the focus here is primary assumption about self. Then on the self and ruler sign, it's major assumptions, and it is about self. I just didn't add that in, and it's similar. It's similar to the other table, except that this is about me as opposed to the world. With the south node, it's about life and the world, and my family and where I find myself. But in the south node ruler, it's about me. And does everybody get that distinction?
Can you just repeat that?
Yeah. When we're talking about the south node. configuration, it's mm-hmm. about the conditioning environments. So it will be the perceptions about the family and life and the world. When we move into the third step, the South Node Ruler, it's about me. It's my role. It's who I am. So if you had your South Node in, if you had your South Node in Cancer, you might think the world is not safe because people around me are not safe. But if you had the South Node Ruler there, you might perceive it, but if your South Node's not there, other people might not. Like, your whole family might not feel that way because it's unique to you as the South Node Ruler karma.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay, cool. And then I did do a thing about the aspects down below, which should be straightforward based on the previous tables or previous handouts, how I kind of approach this. It's all rewritten, but I won't read through the whole thing tonight, but you have this to play with and work with. And the last thing I did on the last page is if the South Node Ruler is retrograde, because it's a special case, and it means that the person, well, retrogrades, right, from the Earth's perspective, they appear to be going backwards. And energetically and consciousness-wise, it's about the energy working differently. Some people say it's focused inward or it's a little backwards or something. And how I look at it in terms of the karmic story, when we look at these four steps with something's retrograde, something has been overdone in a bunch of lives that it might have been a good thing, but it's overdone. It also might be that the wrong thing was done and something authentic wasn't explored. And so the person now will feel this hesitancy to do something. And if it's a South Node Ruler, it can be, how do I assert myself? How do I, how do I do this? How do I do that? So there's a need to check and rethink all these things. And you can find a person who's very hesitant and not willing to do that planet, for example. And that's there's something to keep an eye on too, as kind of a minor point. Until you're actually talking with somebody who has it, it's minor. Say it that way. Yeah. So that's a handout we're going to be playing with tonight. I want to get into your head. This, extending this process. Pluto. What do I have to do to feel life is worth living, but that I'm afraid to do or I'm concerned about doing? Number two, the South Node. What do I think the world is like? What do I think I'm going to find when I go out there? And the South Node Ruler, the third step, is who am I? What do I keep showing up to do? How do people perceive me? That's the trajectory here. That's the trajectory. When we are working with these parts, these three elements of the story, you're looking at how the past is created to be the present. How my assumptions and my comfort zone, how my fears, how my identity I carry forward and create the present as a reflection or a repeat of the past. So when I'm working with people on their karmic story, I tell them the story and kind of tell them, this is where you're coming from, but you're repeating it all because of the beliefs or the assumptions or blind spots that you might cling to or might really feel comfortable with. And then next week when we add in the fourth step, it's the blind spot, the thing that has not been explored a lot, the thing that's a foreign territory, that's the North Node. But as we work tonight, you'll be able to piece together some things in your mind about how this whole arc functions. Yeah. Any questions about that? These three processes together before we explore a little more in these examples? Oh, we're going to look at the example charts too. No questions? Okay. I mean, I know all this is in the Soul's Journey 1, doing this class to give you a chance to practice. So you can always refer back to that book when we're not talking, to see how this stuff fits together, too.
I have a question.
So,
Aria.
Yeah.
You say it's about where you're coming from and you're repeating yourself. Is mm-hmm. it, do we want to change the where we're coming from or... do it in a different way?
Yes, doing it in a different way is good because we'll have assumptions and predilections that might not serve us.
Okay.
So we can't change where we're coming from. I mean, like, my south node ruler moon is in Sagittarius. I can't change that. But I can alter, or I can ensure that I'm doing Sagittarius in a healthy way instead of maybe what I might be predisposed to things that aren't healthy.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. But we can't change any of those things. It's just how we're wired consciousness-wise. You know, how we're wired. And like my business card says, the way you're wired is no accident. But you have free will. Like, let me just give you some examples. I'll use mine very briefly. South Node ruler in Sagittarius, I show up as a Sagittarius figure. I have something I believe. I have something to say. I probably tend toward excess in certain parts of life. I like to laugh. I probably am into humor, but also everything is big when it comes to me. Everything's big, Sagittarius. Now, I can believe things to the point of having myopia and blinders on. You know, I can, because that's a Sagittarius quality. So knowing that my South Node ruler represents a layer of identity, I can check, am I blindly believing something? Or am I intuitively checking myself periodically, which would be another, you know, intuition being another Sagittarius quality or skill. So that's one example. Somebody with the South Node ruler in the South Node ruler in Gemini. It doesn't matter what the planet is, actually, but the South Node ruler in Gemini means that person shows up in many lives as a Gemini figure regardless of the rest of the chart to some degree. The South Node ruler in Gemini, somebody would be curious and open-minded. The person might be relativistic and not ever making firm decisions because everything could be true. So that could be a blind spot. If that person is taking in new data and not neither getting stuck on any one thing nor refusing to learn new things, you know, think about what Gemini is like. They can block that or they can do it to excess. So we just have to find a middle ground. You know, yeah. South Node ruler in Taurus, stubborn would be a pitfall. But intentionally, deliberately conservative might be a skill. You know. So all these different sides of the coins for each sign. Yeah. Including the house, including the aspects that it makes, all those things in there, which we'll explore more. Yeah.
So Tom, this is Mary.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, so when you said yours was in Sagittarius and then you said about the planet, so do you include also then that you might be fairly lunar? Like, do you take notice of the planet or not so much?
Well, no, because the South Node's in Cancer, so yes, I'm lunar.
Oh, yeah, but not the South. So when you go to...
Right.
Oh, of course, yeah. Okay,
right.
So yeah, you are. You've got the... You take bring in the lunar stuff just naturally.
Right,
anyway.
So
you're lunar and big.
Yeah, exactly. I'm lunar and big. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And I'm coming from a lunar place, and I show up as this big figure. Yes.
Right. Yep.
But it, you know, because Moon rules Cancer, I'm not getting more information because Moon is Moon. I'm just looking for where it is and what it's touching.
Oh, okay. Yep.
It's kind of interesting. I can't fully. I don't. At this stage, I mean, nobody can fully explain this so far that I've come in contact with, because this is one of the things that Jehudi told me to look at. Because when I got in Steve Forrest's program in 2004, he wasn't doing this. He was saying the South Node is where you're coming from in this past life indicator. A South Node ruler, he said, gives us more info.
Mm.
And in, I want to say 2006 or 2007, when I was at one of his workshops, it occurred to me, like this thing occurred to me, and I understand now it was probably Jehudi just kind of nudging me, but I was in the workshop thinking, and I raised my hand and asked Steve that, and he said, well, maybe, and then I started using it right away. I've noticed in the last few years he talks about that, but as of 2006 and 2007, he wasn't doing that. That's something that I was researching and came up with.
And then you look at the house to see where you will see that behavior.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I want to give you some generic examples first, like just so you can see how this works. Like forgetting Pluto for a second, let's just do South Node and South Node Ruler. And the idea is to set up a view on the difference between somebody and somebody's family, or somebody, how somebody sees the world and how somebody sees the self. And just to give you generic examples, and you know, you can pull up in your own mind your own chart and just kind of look at this, but it does apply. And by the way, I know Monica wrote to ask me this, but do we use traditional rulers or modern? I used to use modern, and then something happened, and I used traditional rulers for this. So Aquarius, I will use Saturn. Now about 99% of the time. Scorpio, I use Mars, and Pisces, I use Jupiter. I used to use the modern ones, and then something just said play with it, and some intuitive said play with it, and now I use the traditional ones. It's the only traditional thing I ever do, but it really just kind of called out to me. So for you, and I wrote back to Monica, you know, play with it. It might be that it works better for you the other way. There's no hard and fast rule. But as I look at these, I almost always see the traditional ruler being active, and I have no idea why. It's just what I'm doing. So as we talk about this, I will tend to use traditional rulers, you know, if we're talking about a sign that has dual rulership or something. So talking about, let's just pick a south node in the 11th house. Just randomly pick that. And so that, you know, the family environments chosen have to do with a group mind or being aware of networks or being associated with others, goals, friends, which is politics, this kind of thing. And so that family system will be shaped through, you know, by those things. But then if the south node ruler is in the seventh, then that individual is focused on one-to-one relationships. And that might not be an issue. That might, you know, that might be fine. But there are other setups that bring kind of a black sheep thing, where you might have the south node in the 11th house, but the south node ruler in the 5th house. And that would mean the family and the way that the person has been trained to see the world has to do with this 11th house setup, but the individual is a 5th house person. There's several things that count as black sheep setups, and that's one of them. It hasn't happened yet where I've said to somebody, this is a black sheep setup, and the person goes, oh my God, you don't even know. Like, oh, shit. You know, like because the person shows up as the opposite of how the family is. The person might feel that, I was left on a doorstep as a baby or something, you know, in a basket or something like that. It's very prevalent when you have these. I'll just pick another example. South node in the 2nd house, where the family system emphasizes, I know we're leaving out signs and all that, but I just want to give you this basic thing. South node in the 2nd, people in the family system shaped by values, skills, resources, money, and survival issues, and all the things that grow from that. The south node ruler in the 4th house might be concerned with feelings and emotions and the inner reality as well as togetherness. So in the family, if they're concerned about resources, there can be quite a lot of work happening and individualism. But this person, you know, with South and Ruling the 4th, would show up repeatedly with an interest in cohesion and belonging and trying to keep everything together. So there's a lot, you know, it's all, think about any house and then the south moon ruler in any other house, and you start to create a story that way. And we'll do it with the example charts. But does that make sense, looking at the, you know, this contrast here and how the person might show up as somebody different than their family system in certain ways? Okay, cool. And then for signs, the same thing. And when we look at signs and the qualities of signs, modes and qualities, certain things seem to get along together and certain things seem not to get along together. Signs that are next to each other tend to have tension, right? Just like signs that are square or quincunx or opposite each other have tension. So that is another way to look at, same setup with the houses and is with the signs. An automatic setup for a potential black sheep kind of thing. For example, south node in the 7th, concerned about expectations of others, concerned about politeness perhaps, you know, relationships, what it takes to be fair, you know, what it costs to be in relationship. That might be the theme of the family system with the south node in the 7th. If the south node ruler is in the 8th, this person shows up as taboo, as intense, as trying to tell the truth, and doesn't want to be polite. This person can't be polite because of the tension between the energies of the seventh and eighth. Do you see that too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we do that all the way around the wheel, and it's kind of like knowing what each house is about generally, knowing what each sign is about generally. And my point of giving you the other handouts in previous weeks with the basic keywords, that's when this comes in handy. You know, sign keyword for the house. Oh, yeah, and just kind of building the story in basics that way. And you can really get a skeleton or a, how do you say that, like a scaffolding for, you know, to build the rest of the story on. Okay, well, let's look at the same example chart that we looked at last week, which is the first of the three. But tonight we're gonna definitely venture into the second one. But let's just look at that first one again, since we talked about it a little bit, and it might be a little a little familiar here. Let me just figure out how to do. Okay. Okay. So I want to start with the Pluto. So I'm just going to give you the basic keywords here, and then we'll talk about how to spin more of a story with this, or just make sure that you're comfortable with that. So I'm starting to look at Pluto. Pluto in the sign of Cancer in the first house. So with Pluto in the first, there's the emphasis on independence, self, leadership, but the personal individuality. In Cancer, feelings about that. So feelings about the self is a huge part of the Plutonian empowerment journey. You know, validating one's feelings, being emotional, inhabiting emotions, stuff like that. And then with the Jupiter and with the Mars, adding this sense of bigness and this need for self-assertion. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Leaving out those aspects for a moment. And then going to the south node of the moon in Libra in the fifth. In the fifth house, individual creative expression is emphasized in the family system, but it's emphasized in a Libra way, which may be an extreme, like nobody should make too much noise, or it may be kind of a polite kind of fight among egos, right? You know, trying to suss out who gets to speak when, and that's the kind of family environment the person's coming from. So the person needs to do this big emotional thing and assert the self, but it's coming from a place very concerned with a family system, very concerned with politeness, and probably taking the edge off of ego expression. So that's the setup. Then we get to the south node ruler, and that is Venus, right? South node ruler of Libra is always Venus. That's in Scorpio in the fifth. So here we have a black sheep thing. It won't be every chart you look at, but it could be that all these three do. I don't know. But because the south node ruler is in Libra, the south node's in Libra, and its ruler is in the sign 1 over, and the very different qualities of expression. So this person is coming from a fifth house Libra environment, but this person shows up as a Scorpio figure within that environment. So it's actually the example I randomly chose a minute ago, talking about seventh and eighth house. Of course, these are the signs, but doing things in a Libra way, politeness, gentility, courtesy, gentleness, and this person shows up with that look in his eye, in her eye, like, I'm going to tell you the truth, and I don't care if you're uncomfortable. So that's how you can see a setup for potentially, issues in the family system. This person might not feel like he or she belongs there, and by extension, in the world, because remember, the South Node can be what the world seems like. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is he following me? Yeah? Okay. Okay. Make sure you're speaking up if not. So South Node Ruler is in the fifth house, same house, and so there's an element of individual creative expression and art and dance and music and theater and expressing opinions are emphasized here, as well as sexuality. But again, this tension between Libra and Scorpio will tell a lot of the story about this person, how comfortable that person is. Like, I'm a Scorpio person, but I'm surrounded by Libra. How uncomfortable can that be? So that's kind of getting into this, And then we can look at the aspects, too, to build that later. But that will tell you more about the pressures and supports for this individual person that may differ, in this case do, because the they are not conjunct, but they probably differ from the south node itself. Yeah, yeah. So one example here I'll talk about the aspects here, and we'll kind of cover that right now. We have that the squares to the south node, Pluto Jupiter, in Cancer in the first. So separate from this being the Plutonian journey, we're talking about stuff in the family system. There's a tension here, an unresolved karmic issue because it's square the south node, square the nodal axis. So in the family system, there is a thing about, there's a problem, there's a block or something new that needs to be learned, right? This is the thing where there may be 7 key ideas and people know 4 or 5 of them. They have to expand their repertoire by making non-habitual choices, right, new choices. But the south node ruler is trine the Jupiter and by extension the Pluto. So this person actually receives support from Jupiter, Pluto, and Cancer in the first energies. So it's like I'm coming from a family system in which there is tension about how much emotion to show. But I'm in Scorpio. You know, it's a square from Cancer to Libra. How much emotion do I get to show? And, you know, how am I supposed to be proper, polite? How much is appropriate? And then, but I'm in Scorpio, so I love it. I love intense emotionality. Bring it on. And I will gather friends to me. I will have support and mentors who bring that intense emotional energy. But my family can't deal with it. Everyone see how I'm building this? Mm. Yeah. How it's different between the aspects. You know, in this case, the same planets make an aspect to the south node as well as to the south node ruler. And there's a different relationship. Very often, you'll find something, squaring or opposing the south node. Actually, hold on one second. Let me, squaring or opposing the south node ruler that does not aspect the south node itself. So this person may have a problem with this energy, but the family system itself might not. And I've seen it with Saturn. I've seen it with different things, but Saturn always stands out to me, where this person feels like, oh, authority figures are so blah, but the rest of the family doesn't do that. But the person has a problem with authority figures and somehow creates the family to be like that, but the family system itself doesn't have that problem. And that's why this teasing this out has been very important for how I do work, how I work with clients, because it helps them understand their assumptions that might be just unique to them and thought patterns that they could change very easily, as opposed to a very deep thing with their family or something that can be more intense to change, more difficult. Yeah, good, good. So I want to go on to the second chart number 2. Imaginary man born in Casablanca, in January of 1943. Yeah. And I want to just do a couple keywords for you, and then I want to have you expand the story with me. So I'll go first to Pluto. What really needs to get done, but might be challenging to do, and there might be fear about it. Pluto in the ninth house, the house of belief and expansion, imagination, intuition. It's in Leo, so the personal side of that. You know, my own imagination, my beliefs, not the whole universe of beliefs, but how do I fit in to a belief system, or what should I believe? How do I believe? And so it's very going to be important for this person to have, his own unique opinions about belief and belief systems and religion and the philosophy. So it's going to be a great investment in that. Pluto's retrograde, so in a bunch of lives, he's doing it in a way that doesn't work right. He's either identifying with belief systems that don't feel right to him or don't feel authentic, or he is not quite sure what to do, and he's just trying something on for size half-heartedly. That's very common with a retrograde. So that's the kind of basic setup. For now, we're not going to do all the aspects possible. So I'm going to move on to the second step of the story, south node. What kind of environments in many lives is he conditioned by? We're talking about third house. So there's an emphasis on mind, an emphasis on learning and communication. And that is happening in an Aquarius way. So there's something different happening, unique mindsets, interesting sets of data, you know, interesting questions, probably very intellectual, because we have Aquarius in an air house. It probably, we could assume there's a very intellectual thing happening in the family system, even if there's not a lot of education, a lot of smarts, you know, a lot of brightness, a lot of perhaps a genius, probably genius of different kinds. But it could work. It could be unique forms of genius, too, because it's Aquarius in the third. So that's the South Node. So he needs to figure out belief and his own ideas. But he's coming from a family system, the second step, the South Node, in which there's probably a very intellectual, perhaps scientific mind, you know, mindset that's encouraged. So this is a, you know, contrasting energies here. And then the South Node ruler, if I use Saturn, as a traditional ruler of Aquarius, Saturn is in the seventh, Gemini in retrograde. So in this third house environment of mind and learning and asking questions and learning and data, curiosity gathering, data gathering, he shows up as a seventh house figure, which is interested in relationship, interested in the one-on-one, interested in being heard and listening to the other. I don't say he shows up as a Saturn figure, just to underscore that question Mary asked, but I say he shows up as a Gemini figure, and ultimately I would say conjunct Uranus, you know. But he shows up as a seventh house figure in a Gemini way. So he's actually adept at asking questions and listening too. So we're working with somebody who has a great facility with information and communication. And here we have some harmony, by the signs involved, because the South Node in air house and air sign, third Aquarius, and the South Node ruler also in Gemini seventh, air and air. So so this is not a black sheep thing. You know, there's kind of like a setup here for this person's kind of wired in a similar way to the people he comes from. Yeah. And so that's how we build the story in these three steps so far. And is that clear? Just using the basics, I want to expand it with you guys. But is that clear? Just that basic skeleton.
Yes, that part clear.
Yeah. Maria.
Okay. Yeah, Maria.
I kind of had a burning question though. When did the modern rulers come in? When were they?
I don't know when they were assigned. I mean, we know when the planets were discovered. I actually don't know when they were assigned.
Because what I'm thinking is that maybe you keep coming back to traditional rulers because so many of our lives are under that traditional ruler energy.
Yeah. I wonder. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah. Yeah, like somebody's energy field might scream, I am ruled by Saturn. Like, I don't even know. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. So there's our basic story. If I ask you to let me just say a couple other things here. In the third house, somebody isn't interested in what other people really think. They're interested in data, information, facts. Mm-hmm. That's the third house deal here. So this person is different from his family system in that he is wanting to connect with individual others and be heard as a unique individual and to also build something together. Because what's not happening in this family system, Aquarius third, is building consensus and cooperation. We just know that because that's not what the third house is about. There could be very kind, cooperative people, but the family system vibe, at least as this person experiences it, is Aquarius third. And that can actually be a disparate group of brains who happen to be sharing a dinner table. Like that's one of the ways that can be experienced. Again, it can be very kind, warm people, but that's not what this person's going to really experience as the thrust of that. But he lives in the seventh house. So I just want to point out, like, you know, getting a little deeper into this, the differences between these houses. Though I said it's not a black sheep thing, there is definitely a unique, you know, unique approach that this person uses and will experience. So he may perceive the world is full of people talking about numbers or facts, right? That's what he's attuned to. See, that's how he sees the world because of the South Node. But he's trying to connect. He's trying to connect. And adding in the symbolism of Uranus, conjunct the South Node ruler, he'll show up as a Uranus figure. That's from the handout that I gave, that I emailed today. So he shows up as a Uranus and the Gemini and the seventh figure. So he's actually, he's asking interesting questions, and he's looking for unique people to interact with. And so this is somebody who probably does what he can to collect interesting people, but it's in Gemini, so probably not for the long term. Probably he'll have, probably this person would have like a long list of interesting people he's met and he knew for 20, you know, for 2 hours at a time. I met this person playing chess in the park, and this is what he told me, and that's what it taught me. You know, like, kind of like looking for interesting people, but it's in Gemini. So there's also needs to be a variety and change. Mm-hmm. But for this person, because the South End ruler is in the seventh, it's about people. That, you know, he's really a lot about people. Yeah. So as all this coming together, I just want to make sure we're square, because everyone's so quiet today. Wondering if everyone's muted themselves because they're
listening
through their notebooks. You're listening, okay. Wondering if you're all like wrestling through your papers or something, so you kindly muted yourself. So here we have this contrast, right? In the first chart, we have that idea of the South Node and South Node ruler are in the same house, but in signs that would indicate tension. Mm-hmm. So, and then in the second chart, we have, you know, they're kind of simpatico, right? They're air, and they're both air signs and air houses, so there's something in common. So this is a level to look at that will answer for you so many questions about why a client is asking you what he or she is asking you. Because when you can see this, you know, like the difference between these two charts, the first one, there's tension. I'm real, and these people are all concerned with what's proper. You know, but we all have strong opinions, fifth house. They won't talk about theirs, and I can't stop talking about mine. You know, that's one possibility. And then that person brings up family, and you should assume, you know, independent of the Pluto and Cancer in the first square of the node, so feelings and emotions and family and all this stuff, independent of that, there's just this automatic texture built into this person's wiring. This person's experience as a human, I should say it that way. It's an automatic tension of that semi-sextile or that 30-degree thing with contiguous signs. So automatically, there's going to be friction and tension. So it's good to make a note of the black sheep thing versus, you know, not having that in there. As another example, my South Node is in Cancer, but my South Node ruler is in Sagittarius, and that is a quincunx. That's 5 out of 12 signs away. And so that's a black sheep setup. So I'm coming from people who are concerned with Cancerian issues, and to some degree I am too, but I show up as a Sagittarius figure, and in many ways I don't fit because I'm not traditional. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm big and I laugh loud, and it's not about carrying forward traditions, or it's not about togetherness, it's about expansion. And so you just know that is an automatic thing. And so if you're talking to me, don't be surprised if I tell you that, you know, I don't go home for the holidays. Like, it's just like an automatic thing built in. I might go back, and I might have feelings about it, but assume that there's like tension because it's a quincunx. The life I keep creating in a bunch of lives is a natural, uncomfortable tension with the people I come from. Yeah. Doing the same thing, let's actually look at the third chart for the first time. This chart from 74. It's a imaginary female from 74. And I want to build the story again in a couple of keywords, you know, just a couple, a few keywords for each part of these, for each one of these three steps. Pluto, what does a person have to do but might be afraid to do? And the third house, so it's about education and speaking, writing, teaching. It could be about asking questions, or it could be about getting the answers to, you know, to questions. It's in Libra, so this is happening in a Libra way. So the person might be very polite about asking questions to her detriment and not get the truth. You know, she also might be very extreme about how she goes after information and how she speaks to people. Pluto represents extremes, but also Libra can too. We're trying to find the middle ground. We don't know balance. We're trying to create it. We're trying to find out what that means. And that can have us at different times exploring extremes. So this can also be extremes about access to education, extremes about lots of different things about this third house communication. Probably a very powerful mind, but maybe sheepish to talk. That's one thing that I see a lot with Libra in the third. People who are very clear they know what's happening, but they might, you know, tiptoe or walk on eggshells because they've had karmic experiences of telling the truth and having that be a problem. And then this is retrograde. So how this person approaches this needs to be rethought and reworked. That's the baseline. Whatever it is, if the person is boisterous, the retrograde says, learn how to be moderate. If the person is shy and timid, the retrograde says, learn how to be moderate. So that's the retrograde idea. The second step of the story, south node of the moon. Again, you know, as we established last week, a couple weeks ago, the south node doesn't show up, but the north node does. So as we're looking at this chart for the first time, we see the north node at 22 Sagittarius in the 5th, and the south node, we know automatically, that 22 Gemini in the 11th, up there in that not so far from Moon and Mars and Saturn, between Moon and Saturn. So the south node's in the 11th, so coming from a family system where the group ideal or the American dream or propriety or goals and networks and even politics, but kind of like what the group mind thinks, what the mob mind or mob mentality thinks or the group mind, that's very important. And it's happening in a Gemini way. So it could be lots of different sources of information. It could be consistently changing groups and associations, but and also, you know, fresh ideas about goals and things like that changing all the time. And that's kind of just talks about, you know, this baseline of the south node. Then the south node ruler of Gemini is Mercury, and this person, Mercury is in Cancer in the 8th, conjunct Jupiter. So Pisces in the 8th, conjunct Jupiter. So this person's coming from an air sign and an air house, Gemini 11th. And the person shows up as a water figure, Pisces in the 8th. So feeling, you know, in the 8th house, we're talking about intimacy, trust issues, how to share things with people, how to create intimacy with people, build bridges, but in a very personal and intimate space. And in Pisces, this person's concerned with learning to surrender, going with the flow, and this is going to be a very deeply intuitive person. Now, the person is coming from perhaps intellectual people who are talking a lot, asking questions, exploring different ways of being in the world, exploring different groups of people to be with, different social circles. But this person is in Pisces in the 8th, is sensing things very deeply. So here we have some setup for potentially some tension. I need you to look me in the eyes and not speak. But everyone that I know, you know, people who are around me when I'm growing up, including my family, nobody seems interested or able to do that. So I'm looking for a kind of connection that's very deep. And I want to merge with you. I want to sit, you know, and stare into your eyes and just know that we're together and communicate nonverbally. But, you know, coming from this other kind of place, that can be some automatic tension in there. By sign, those two things are square, right? By house and by sign, actually, they're square. Though though the Mercury is not in orb of the nodes. I would use 10 degrees. This is 11. So that's kind of how I'm building this story. And, you know, again, it's always with this compassionate view towards being able to help the person with what seems wrong. And as I build this story, I'm you can read between the lines. I'm setting up, you know, tension, things that might be wrong in my mind. I don't assume everything is awful, but I'm listening for what might seem out of place for that person. Like, let's go back to chart number 2 for a second. I know we're jumping around, but this is actually very useful, I think, in the longer scheme. Chart number 2, this imaginary Moroccan man. I don't know if you can be both. You can be Moroccan and imaginary, but let's just let it be that way. So his south node's in the third house, so he's coming from people in the mind, right, and data-oriented people. But his Pluto is in that ninth house, which is the opposite house, and they're opposite signs as well, Aquarius, Leo. So the worst thing for him is intellectual detachment, because he needs to identify with his beliefs, Leo in the ninth. He needs to wear his belief on his sleeve, like forgetting the retrograde for a second, but he needs to show, this is what I believe, and this is how I came here. This is my story. But he's coming from people who can be very detached, and so that's like an automatic thing. You know, that's like an automatic thing that sets up the story. And when you do this enough, you'll notice that everybody's life, as reflected in the chart, is a fantastic novel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you could just, you know, if you could see that the dramatic tension is set up, you're just looking at it for 10 minutes, looking at this vague, generic story, and you're like, aha, yeah, there's several chapters I could do on that later when that unfolds, you know, when that comes up as an issue. And so everybody's life to me looks like this fabulous novel that's unfolding. And so much, so much detail, or so much insight, say it that way, can be had through using this four-step process that, without knowing a person before he or she talks to me, I know him or her. Like, I know the story. I don't know what choices have been made or what beliefs resulted. I don't know what exactly the event was that hurt, but, I can see what the story is. And so I always use that as this, well, I'm always coming from a compassionate place of accepting the person and trying to understand the journey in order to help the person correct, you know, what's happening. So I'm just pointing that out to you as I make little notes, you know, I make little verbal notes for you, like, aha, look at that, you know, that potential thing. It's probable that what a person talks about with you will bring that up if you're getting into the karmic story about things. Yeah. So, does the South Node Ruler thing make sense? Are there any questions about the handout or the table, or do you want to, or you can ask me if we can play with random examples? Just let me know how this is landing, or if you're just absorbing and processing, or what's going on.
Tom, this is Jillian. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if in the imaginary Moroccan man's chart, mm-hmm. if you could actually go on and talk about the South Node Ruler Saturn's opposition to mm-hmm. Mars in Sagittarius, because I was, my little mind was going off and seeing, well, you know, like square, or, you know, tense aspects to the South Node Ruler and their mm-hmm. role in the journey.
Perfect. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll noted. And does anybody else have any comments or questions, and we'll stack them up? No? Okay, cool. So as reflected in this handout that I sent today, that you guys haven't spent a lot of time with, but as reflected in that, we have the aspects of the South Node Ruler on this second page. So we go down to the opposition, challenging and confronting. And anything in aspect to Pluto or the South Node or the South Node ruler can represent or can be represented by a person in real world, an activity, an energy, a trend, a theme, a group. A situation is very common, actually. A person in a situation, sometimes groups, are very, very common. So when we look at an opposition to the South Node ruler, a body or point opposing that this represents energies and others that will show up to challenge, confront, or oppose the person. Again, remember, this is individual, the person's individual experience. And as we notice in this chart, the South, or this Mars, in this 8-degree opposition to Saturn, which I'd count definitely, is not aspecting the nodes. It's in a wide trine to Pluto, but it's not aspecting the nodes. So as we look at this, we're looking at something that opposes him, but does not oppose his family system. So it's like his experience independent of theirs. Mm. Yeah, and it's going to be a very important detail. The chart and the different qualities of experience can be, you know, think about an opposition, how somebody could be across from you. And often I talk about this in terms of there are kind of two main possibilities. One can be gunslingers in the street ready to have their showdown. And that's like, I don't like you, you don't like me, there isn't room in this town for the two of us. The other, I have fun with that one, that image, but the other one can be, I don't know who you are, I don't understand you, but you seem to be able to see me. I wonder how you see me. Can you tell me something about me that I don't know? I'm willing to hear, even though you're very different than me. That's the other way that we usually experience opposition. So as I say, the chart holder might feel these people are not understandable, they are unavailable, or perhaps are enemies or must be struggled with or avoided. So it's the other, right? Classic opposition, the other. So here's this person, Saturn in Gemini, or the South Node ruler in Gemini in the 7th. And I do want to tie in that it's conjunct to Uranus and that both are retrograde. I do want to paint that story before I talk about the Mars. So South Node ruler in the 7th, I'm interested in the other person. I'm interested in your opinion. I want to know what you think. I might not latch on to you for long because I'm just looking for the nuggets, the most interesting people I can find, you know, possible. Or I have a bunch of friends, and they're eccentric and eclectic. Gemini the 7th. Conjunct Uranus, unique, looking for unique people. Sudden changes in relationship are very common with Uranus in the 7th, especially conjunct South Node ruler. This person, you know, could feel great because there's a wide variety of people or a large variety, but also could feel kind of crummy because he can't hold on to any important relationships or that he would have to keep his mouth shut if he were to hold on to. You know, he couldn't be authentic, be truthful, and, you know, keep people in his life. That he's both retrograde means that ways he has of exploring relationship and communicating within relationship and all that stuff and evolving through relationship need to be rethought. He needs to either have different relationships for different reasons or have a variety of them or something like that. Something has to change. That's the natal setup here. South Node ruler opposing Mars says that Mars people oppose him. Mars people, Mars situations. You think about the natural tension between the 1st and the 7th. In the 7th, I'm listening. I'm waiting for what you might tell me. In the 1st, I'm just doing my own thing. Like in this case, if I'm in the 7th, you are just doing your own thing. I'm trying to connect with you. I'm trying to have a conversation with you. And you're just off doing your own thing. So that kind of stuff can oppose him. In Sagittarius, people can be big, can be... could be proud, could be fiery. It's also Mars people, because it could be fiery and passionate. But there's this element also of belief. And so this person, I mean, one benign way this can come about is approaching people and asking questions because he's curious and finding other people who are assertive or aggressive or very quick-moving who don't think about things. It's just gut response. Without much conversation. This is the the worst thing for a Gemini, well, the worst thing for a seventh house person is to get one-word answers. Like, no matter what you ask, you get a one-word answer. And that's like the most benign thing that can come with this. That would be something that happens on a regular basis, perhaps. I mean, one thing that could happen. But it's also Mars. So it can also be aggression. Now, kind of, you know, fleshing on a different layer for you, because I always want you to understand that, you know, a person's responses today can be shaped by different experiences across time that have nothing to do with this life. So in some lives, this could be aggressive people blocking you. This can be violent people, you know, Mars in a fire sign in the first house. You know, this can be very loud, quick-moving, aggressive people. It could be the reality of war, like a situation as opposed to a person. And it can be, you know, we can paint a picture of this person as a teacher. It would not be a stretch with, but the most interesting teacher in the whole institution. With the Southland ruler in Gemini, conjunct Uranus, the person's got a mind that might never stop. Always interesting things happening. So we might paint a picture of a teacher whose ability to do that and to stay in that wonderful one-on-one dynamic that the person needs in the seventh house, that might be dashed against the rocks by war, in which case a situation, Mars in the first house, can oppose the person. It might not affect the community as much as the person, because we're not talking about the South Node. This person could have been teaching elsewhere, or this person could have been yet another example. Person could have been singled out for teaching Uranian things. And the police could be the Mars, coming in with a stick to try to make him be quiet. So you see where I'm going, how I do that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so because Mars is opposing the South End ruler, assume that there's violence in some life, at least one. I mean, probably many of them, frankly, just the way that humans have treated each other. It's just been really crummy sometimes. You know, it's just ridiculous. But I don't like what I heard. This guy over there was teaching this thing, and he has class at 2 today. Go over there and make him be quiet. You know, like stuff like that's happened, and not always publicized well, but it has definitely happened. On the other hand, this can also not be violent, but it can be an authority figure in the first house. It could be just an assertive leader, not a Saturn authority figure, but an assertive leader who doesn't like what you're saying and doing. It doesn't have to be violent, but there's an opposition. There's blocking, challenging, confronting, that kind of thing. Assuming that there's something very perhaps physical that's an issue for this person over time, this person's willingness to be assertive might be hampered in many lives. So you might be sitting there with this guy, this imaginary Moroccan, and you're looking at this South Node ruler in Gemini in the seventh, conjunct Uranus. Man, this guy probably loves to talk. Like that's an assumption that you would probably be pretty safe, you know. It's Scorpio rising, second house sun, but whatever. The South Node rulers in Gemini in the seventh. So he's, you know, lots of mental activity going on, and he does like engaging with others. But he might not initiate conversation because he has been opposed by Mars in the first people. So he doesn't want to own Mars in the first, chances are. We never want to become the kind of people who hurt us. So it's a very important thing to look at. Anything opposing the South Node ruler can be something we avoid because these people and these situations have given us problems. So he might shut up. That might be why these things are retrograde, because he needs to open up again. You know, he needs to do it in a new way. But he might be afraid to open up. He might be afraid to say what he's really thinking to somebody. He might be afraid to confide in somebody. Because in some other life, maybe somebody came after him with a stick for radical ideas that he was teaching. Rational ideas that were radical. He saw nothing wrong with them. This is a possibility. Yeah. Yeah. So then shifting gears a little bit, is all that clear so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I never want to become the person who hurt me. Never. You know, so I will avoid it at all costs. So then you'd also look to, for example, transits to that Mars. And the you would see the person needing to do something, but perhaps avoiding it to a degree because I don't want to become the kind of person who hurt me. But they won't even have that idea. You know, like if this guy is not assertive, he won't say, well, I've experienced aggression and I don't want to be that kind of person. He may. A small percentage, I mean, maybe 10, 20% of the people would have that idea, oh, I don't want to do that because that seems problematic. But you can look at that chart and know that. He has been blocked by Mars. Like the Mars stick has come after him, you know? And so he might not want to assert himself. So, but then, personality level, Mars is in the first house. So if he doesn't do Mars, you know, if he's not assertive, if he's not physically active, if he's not, you know, allowing himself to be robust physically, Sagittarius in the first, his whole energy field is going to be messed up, and he's going to be like half psychotic if he doesn't get exercise. You know, like, so anyway, so he's opposed by Mars, but he has to be Mars. And if he's blocked, he won't know why. And this is what evolutionary astrology is for, as far as I'm concerned, unraveling this, how these things, you know, get messed up in our psyches. So does that all make sense then? Like he has to do it, but he might not want to. He might be afraid. Yeah, okay. So you're sitting with him, and you say it's really important for you to overcome any repressed anger. And he will say, oh, my God, right? Because if he doesn't own Mars, Mars will be repressed. And so taking one step further, adding new layers of vocab to attach to this image of he's been opposed by Mars. He's been challenged by angry people, probably like hurt at different times. So I would assume before I saw him that if he is not very athletic and very forthright and open and free about his sexuality, right? However that looks to him, you know, whatever that feels like to him or means to him. If he's not doing that, I will assume there's repressed anger because he won't want to own Mars. Yeah, he won't want to own Mars. Yeah. So that's like what goes through my head when I look at that with the client. Like that, like 10 or 12 minutes. That's what I'm looking at. And it just keep building stories. And actually, you know, I'd love to change this up for you right now. Like let's say that this South Node ruler setup is the same. South Node ruler, you know, retro in Gemini in the 7th, conjunct Uranus, opposing, but let's change the opposing planet. And I want to talk about how it's different. Let's say it's not Mars, but let's say it's Moon. Let's say that Moon is actually at 14 Sagittarius in the first. So everything I've said about he's opposed by these Sagittarius first house people is true, or situations, but now it's Moon. They're not aggressors. They're not athletes. They're not warriors. You know, they are women, family members, comrades, but people you're like brothers in arms, like people you're emotionally connected to, your family and community. So in this case, we have maybe family leaders of the family, like Moon and the First, bold people in the family, who make decisions and who believe things very strongly, which is Sagittarius, opposing him. So if I see that in there, then I'm assuming that he has. There's a lot more tension with his family than just the fact that Pluto is in the opposite sign and house as his south node. So I will assume that he might not feel heard by his family. He might feel that expectations, because the opposition is, I don't understand you, and I can't see you. Or I don't like you, and I don't even know why. I just didn't take the time to listen or get to know you. So if Moon were opposing South Node Ruler, opposition by family. If it's Jupiter, people who believe things. It's like that simple. Like religious people or philosophers or people who believe things strongly. People who are big, people who take up space. Right? If it's Saturn opposing South Node Ruler, it's authority figures. Teachers, mentors, parents. And so you just go around the wheel, just go around the whole palette here, the whole kind of roulette wheel. And whatever's opposing the South Node Ruler, that person is confronted, challenged, and blocked by. And may feel misunderstanding or may feel an enemy vibe. And so does that make sense to kind of substituting things in there too?
Yeah, and so Tom, then because it's in the first house, so say it was it was Mary, it would say the Moon opposing the South Node Ruler. So then he may not be able to, because it's the first house, you're saying he may not be able to embody that lunar if he's been opposed by it.
Right.
Yeah, so then he may kind of repress that nurturing side of himself. Is that what?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. But he would have to in order to be healthy.
Right.
But yes, you're right.
And
exactly.
That's because it's the first house.
In the first house, right. We have to do what's in our first house or we're just messed up.
Yeah.
And so if it were Jupiter, he would have to embody a belief, but he might be reluctant to do so because people who believe things have been his enemies or seemed that way. Right, so it's like an authority figure, same thing for Saturn in the first. He would have to do it, but he might be reluctant to do it. Yeah. Like I'll just tell you, Saturn opposes my South Node Ruler. So my Saturn return was particularly interesting because I had to become Saturn. I had to explore for the first time in my life becoming Saturn in a positive way. It was really challenging because I didn't want to be like those people. I always felt blocked by them. I didn't agree with what they were saying. I felt like I couldn't have my Sagittarius freedom because, Sagittarius. And anyway, so it's like, then you look at transits to that and understand that, the pressures and invitations can be multi-layered and very challenging because that person has to do something. Has to do something. Yeah. And there's going to be inner dialogue with a person with an opposition to the South Node Ruler. So let's do this for a sec and then talk about squares and sextile trine and conjunction. Let's do that to explore that a little, to go into depth and to give you more fodder, more ammunition for that. So there's going to be some beliefs about, could be I can't get along with these people. It could be I believe that they always have something interesting to show me, right? These beliefs might not coexist in the same person, but there's a wide variety of possibilities. It could be that I have to stay on edge around those people. I can't afford to listen to them because they might take something away from me or try to stop me. That's common too. It doesn't have to be an extreme dramatic situation, but they might stop me if they know what I'm thinking. They might, opposition, they don't understand me. I feel laid bare. I might not trust them. So it's good to also kind of read into those kinds of things too. And with this one, South Node Ruler in Gem 7th, and then this, Mars and Sag opposing it, some of those are going to, they're going to be beliefs about assertiveness and aggression. The person might think that to be assertive would be overly aggressive. The person might think that anybody who is, very masculine, and man or woman, anybody who is in his or her body, anyone who is athletic. I mean, it can go, it can go on and on and on, but the associations of what Mars and Sag in the first could be. But could be intimidated by people like that and not ever open to what they have to say or what they could show him or her. Because here we have South Node Ruler in the 7th in an air sign, conjunct Uranus, person's, with a South Node in Aquarius in the 3rd, the person is probably up in his head very often. So, needing to do Mars and Moon, but needing to do this Mars in the first house and such. And there could be, like in school, 16 years old. There could be somebody who's very athletic who just says, you know what, this imaginary Moroccan guy is kind of cool. I want to talk to him. The guy, this chart holder, could be completely flummoxed in being around somebody who is very in his body and athletic. Like, that's one possibility. That's actually benign, but that could be a result. So this person could say, I heard you're having trouble in Latin. I'm actually getting that well. Do you want to trade tutoring? Because I'm having a thing with chemistry. And it might be really weird. I mean, it might be great, but it could be really weird, and you'd have to look for where this person might not welcome Mars into his life, even if the person's friendly and helpful. Yeah. So putting that where it is, I'm talking about the square to the south node ruler. In this chart, I don't know, wide square to Chiron, but we didn't talk about that yet. But just a square to the south node ruler would be pressure and friction, criticism, and the you know, general rubric, you're doing it wrong. That's what squares feel like. Whatever it is you're doing it wrong. Here's how to do it better. And that can come through as, you know, the feeling of, well, gosh, this person thinks I stink or is invalidating me, or this person might have something useful that I don't really know how to do.
Wait, Tom?
Yeah.
Thomas is Jillian.
Yeah.
In the third part, in the third chart, there are squares to the self node ruler. If you want to look at that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Yeah, thank
example.
You. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. So we have this person who's in the eighth house. So again, we're talking about this intuitive person who's looking for someone to trust and open up to and be vulnerable with, and then this Piscean thing. One square is to Moon Mercury in Gemini in the 11th. So the square is pressure and friction, and you're doing it wrong. It's just natural. We can look at Pisces and Gemini, and you can do this all the way around the wheel. It's like a separate kind of full class, but to really get this drilled into your head. But Pisces is about flowing with things and, you know, not asking questions. You know, Gemini is about the facts. And so Pisces can be very hands-off and very dreamy quality. And Gemini is right here, and the senses are operating. I'm seeing with my eyes, I'm tracking with my brain, and I'm talking with my mouth. A kind of like here and now thing. So this person is trying to connect in a deep emotional way and is squared, which is pressure and friction, by Gemini people, Mars, Moon. And that can be people who are very aggressive about emotions. They talk about their feelings. People who are motivated by emotion, all these bunch of different things. But this is, you know, pressure to do something differently. You should talk about your feelings. But this person would need to trust you before ever opening her mouth. Like, we need to know that you can handle it. And Gemini would not present as being able to handle it, because Gemini doesn't present as deep. Like, people are amazing and multifaceted, but just Gemini squaring you never feels deep. I'll just tell you that. You know, because it's like, you know, if you're in Virgo, you're trying to be specific, and Gemini might be trying to be general. But if you're in Pisces, that square, you're trying not to be specific. You're trying not to be detail-oriented. You're trying not to know the facts. You're trying to get the sense of something, the vibe of something would be a very Pisces way to be. So that kind of pressure and friction, criticism to change can come from that source. And from the other side, Neptune in Sagittarius in the fifth. So a square from Neptune people, said this way, Neptune people can be dreamy. And they can be not in touch with reality. They can be mystical, meditators, you know, yogis, yoginis, whatever. They can be healers. They can be people who, well, in Sagittarius, they can be people who believe things very strongly. And in the fifth house, they can have they believe in their own opinions very strongly. So one of the myriad ways to look at this particular signature is people who could be kind of high on their own egos and stuck there might square this person as well. I mean, it's safe to say it could be artists, could be people with strong opinions, it could be religious people, it could be spiritual people, Neptune and Sagittarius, But whatever it is, they're attached to their own opinion. This is the fifth house, the personal expression. And so the tension here can be this person's trying to find the you know, go down the stairs within this eighth house person, trying to go down into this, you know, the basement and connect with somebody where pretense is lost, where the deep reality of human emotive function is revealed. You know, some deep thing, right? And then you have, you know, Neptune and Sagittarius in the fifth. It can be like very slippery people who are very attached to their own egos and believe things strongly. You can't really, you might not be able to get at them because they're Sagittarius. They might be, the arrow might be launched. So you can't even really catch up with them because they're you know, they're already gone. Like, there's no chance to connect. So that can be the square, the friction. And that can feel like a misconnection, or it can be the actual person saying, gosh, you really think about things too a lot, don't you? When the reality is the person's sensing things and trying to feel things, but it might look like the person's just like, you know, not in this moment enough. And so that can be a Sagittarius fifth house criticism. Yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah? Happy with that? Okay. Okay. And let's actually go up to the first chart, and let me see if there's any... Actually, yeah, in the first chart, let's go up there, and let's explore the two difficult aspects here. One is a square to moon, and one is a quincunx to Uranus. We haven't talked about the quincunx yet here. Bless you, whomever you are. But actually, the quincunx being very important. So again, the square, pressure, friction from moon people who are close, people who are important, people this person's connected to. And I said women. This is a generic keyword for moon in the chart. Moon and Venus, people say women. But it's also just people you feel connected to. And it could be literal family. That family or that influence is in Leo. So there's an expressive thing. But in the second house, probably very fixed. Right? Second house is associated with Taurus, the house of the bull. Developing an opinion and not moving. You know? So it can be somebody very passionate or very loud about what is important to him or her. And squaring the South Wind ruler in Scorpio in the fifth. There's a resonance here. Fifth house being squared by something in Leo, there's a resonance of that archetype, the solar archetype. When you see something like that, you know, honestly, especially when you see like a square from Leo to Scorpio, it can be a power struggle. Or at least seem that way. Because Leo needs to shine, but Scorpio may think that's inauthentic. And then Leo may look at that reaction in a certain way, and there can actually be, because the signs are square, you're doing it wrong. You're doing ego wrong. With Scorpio, it's like, sense what's happening and respond accordingly. Leo's like, just do whatever you feel like doing. It's very, very different energy. Leo's also typically loud. Well, at least from the eyes of Scorpio, you know, from the eyes of Scorpio. So this person, I need to develop my own opinion, fifth house, and I'm in Scorpio. I got to speak the truth. And I'm being, you know, my mother can't stand the art that I make, you know. My art is all phallus art, and my mother is really angry with me. She cries. It's like I'm telling the truth of something. Penises exist, and my mother's upset. You know, it's like, it's, you know, maybe traditional second house. You know what I mean? Like, but this could be like taboo art. This can be like, who's that guy who wrote Howl? The guy. You know the guy who wrote the Howl.
Allen Ginsberg.
It's Allen Ginsberg, Scorpio in the fifth. Like, I don't know what his chart's like off the top of my head, but it's like, I'm going to tell you the truth and it might make you uncomfortable, and this is my personal statement. You know? Like, you know how certain poets can write something, but it's not a personal statement, but like, for Ginsberg and the people he influenced, it's like, this is my personal statement, and this is really what's happening. So there's a very fifth house kind of Scorpio vibe, at least. That. But this can be like the conservative mother, you know, the blue-haired lady who lives in the fifth floor walk-up and, like, you never ask for anything and, like, oh, I'm so proud of you. How could you write that book? You know, and that can be like a pressure and friction there. And it could be an entire family, or it could be a person within the family to whom one feels very connected. Yeah. So that's a possibility here. And then shifting gears into the quincunx. The quincunx tends to feel like I can't be in the same room with you. That's what a quincunx often feels like. If we are grounded and mature, we don't have to feel crappy about that. We can learn from the other person. But the first thing is, I just don't get that. What are you doing? Why would anyone want to be like that? That's a very common thing. But then when the quincunx is activated, meaning when we affect each other in a quincunx kind of way, I can be knocked off course, you can be knocked off course. It can be a surprise, blindsided from left field, and I'm not quite sure how to get up again. I'm not quite sure how to recover from that. It was just completely out of left field, out of the blue. So that's the feeling, oil and water, and also like sudden shocks, you know, sudden things that are very shocking. So this person, Scorpio in the fifth, I am endeavoring to tell the truth about how I really see things. And a quincunx, knocked off course, surprised, like the fox surprised off of one, by Uranus and Aries in the 11th. So the 11th house would be groups, you know, just generic here, very broad speaking. A sudden thing or a particular, you know, objective, intellectual kind of person, but happening in an Aries way, doing a Uranus person or group, doing an Aries thing that knocks me off course. All kinds of possibilities. But you have this sudden thing happening, and that can actually be a change in the collective, because we're talking about the 11th house, the group. And something like this, like one kind of example is, I am a poet in 1931 Berlin, and everything's great. And this is the high life, you know this like the scene in like early, you know, before the National Socialists take over in Germany. The scene in Berlin, it's the most cosmopolitan, risque, sexy place on the planet. And people are gender bending. People are cross dressing. Like homosexuality is in certain pockets. It's like, you know, right. And there's art, and people are expressing themselves. There's dance, there's music, there's plays, there's all kinds of things. And suddenly, you know, some guy with a shitty mustache gets everyone to think that all these artists are dangerous. So you have like an 11th house thing happening rather suddenly that might knock you off course, might knock your 5th house truth expression off course. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of thing we're talking about, like a social change or a community change or social policy, something that knocks your expression off course. I mean, Uranus and Aries can also be a social war machine. You know, it can also be a sudden policy change that's not violent, you know, like a regime change that just happens suddenly. And, today we might look at an artist whose funding is cut off. Let's say the person is supported by a government grant, and that person really relies on that. It maybe has for the last, you know, few years or decade. And then there's a policy change and funding gets cut. And, you know, what we look at is, well, I mean, that's too bad. And, wow, you know, that person's got to figure something else out. But to an artist, that can seem like, you know, society abandoning you. You know, like the world itself. And that would be another 11th house thing, quincunxing your 5th house art or 5th house expression. Yeah. And it can also be something quick and violent, because Uranus and Aries quincunxing you in any circumstances can be very difficult. You know, so, So that's kind of that. Now, from the soul's perspective, you know, none of this is random. You know, in something like this, with a quincunx to the south node ruler, the soul's intention is that you learn from this energy by being knocked off course by it. Essentially, that you get to the point where you can integrate intentionally ways of doing that energy that will heal these memories of being knocked off course, but keep you on your toes. It's like this person to be Venus in Scorpio in the fifth, and to allow that, yes, sudden things happen in the 11th house. And it's like a way of the soul saying this person needs to be on his or her toes, not get stuck. That's like the point of a quincunx to the south node ruler. You can't get stuck. You can't get stuck. They need to heal the trauma of it, because it's almost always traumatic, even if it's not violent. It's like usually very sudden and life-altering. Now, the point with a square to the south node ruler would be that you're supposed to learn about this by experiencing all kinds of expressions of it that are not what you would do. So this is like let's say in this other chart, let's jump back to that third chart. We have the south node ruler in Pisces in the eighth. Square, Moon, Mars, and Gemini in the 11th. Essentially, the mob mentality, the group mind, the social fabric might actually make this person feel unwelcome in certain ways. But Mars, Moon, and Gemini, they're real within the person. It's like a real energy that everybody has, right? Mars and Moon and Gemini. But in this combination, the soul is saying this person needs to learn about these by being pressured by them. Now, in this case, it could be a real difficulty feeling accepted in groups because things move very quickly and I'm not sure who to trust. It's just one, broad thing that I might say about that. They require a quick decision, but I got to suss it out. I got to feel into it for a few days, and that can be tension. Well, being able to make quick decisions is actually a good thing. So can this person learn to integrate that and see, all right, they're wanting something from me that I'm not comfortable doing. Can I stretch into learning something from that process? And when you have a square like this, the South Node Ruler, this stuff will come up a lot. Because your very identity needs to be pressured and squared, given friction, by something. So for me, Saturn opposing South Node Ruler Moon, I'm always drawing Saturn people to me, and I have to decide, am I going to be a positive Saturn figure, or am I going to push away what looks like it's bad to me? Because I can just see it as the enemy, or I can say, but now I have this what I'm talking to tonight, these perspectives. And I can say, right, I keep drawing Saturn figures who seem to oppose me, and it only happens because I'm supposed to integrate something positive about Saturn, even if I'm being exposed to things I don't like. And does that make sense to you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But let's say the point of an opposition would be being confronted by the opposite. Can you expand your view? The soul says, person needs to be blocked by what he or she would never do. Can this person learn? Is this person willing to open up to an alternate perspective on the self, taking that reflection in? So in my case, I might always be at odds with teachers when I'm in school. I might think, oh, these people, another one of these people who thinks they know everything, Jesus, But it's like, but the truth is, they've studied something. They're educated. They're just doing it in a different way than I am because they're opposite me. So can I be chill enough to see that I don't know everything? And honestly, at age 13, 15, 16, probably not so much. At 17, 18, a little bit more, and in college, definitely. I had to do a Saturn thing. I had to sit still and be quiet and be humble and listen, in order to see what they could offer me. Different people who thought different ways and communicated different ways. So anyway, there's always a point to all these things from the soul's perspective. None of this is random. None of this is random. Any questions or comments since we seem to be at the hour and a half? I know it's always a lot of information. You got to go digest it, but if you have any questions or comments, let me know now, and if not, stay in touch over email, because I'm happy to help unwind the things. All that stuff about makes sense. This is me. South Node Ruler is me. I identify that way. Even if I don't do it, other people will tell me that I should, and all that stuff. Yeah. So anything else? Tonight?
Tom, I don't know if this will make any sense, But is there any sort of hierarchy? You know, like, this is, you don't have to answer this in at length, just briefly, but you know when the, like, the third chart with the South Node ruler in Pisces and it's squaring the Neptune? I'm just trying to still work out, even though it's a square, because it's the Neptune's rule of the Pisces, to me that would seem, I'm just trying to work out if there's any hierarchy, like that you'd look at the sign before the planet, because the planet itself would sort of indicate that maybe there wouldn't be as much friction. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. So this is my invitation to, you know, in this case, or in this way of looking at it, look at, I mean, on personality level, yeah, look at those connections. In this way, I kind of invite you to do it in a specific way. South Node ruler in the eighth, functioning in a Piscean way.
Sure.
Right? Eighth house person, you know, behaving in a Pisces way, right?
Yep.
And all the keywords you could tie into that.
Yeah.
Is getting friction from a fifth house person who's Neptunian, right? Neptune fifth house person acting in a Sagittarius way.
Yeah.
So the eighth house in a Pisces way could be my trust issues approached in a weird, non-linear way.
Yeah.
Right, my trust issues approached in a Pisces way. In the fifth house, ego issues, you know, or the Neptune in the fifth, ego issues, you know, in a Sagittarius way. Ego in a huge way, you know, perhaps blind, you know, delusional about the size of ego would be.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's kind of what we're looking at.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do that hierarchy thing and trace, you know, dispositorship and all that. I don't really do that.
No.
Yeah.
It just seems I'll just need to look at the signs maybe more than the natural rulers or something like that. If they seem to go together, maybe I just need to look at the signs in the houses. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in some way, this four-step process excludes a great deal of great astrology. You know, in some ways, it really does. And in some ways, it really excludes certain interesting, clever thought patterns and clever associations people routinely make and work with. And I recognize that it's very Sagittarius. It's very focused. You know, but here I am, South Node ruler in Sagittarius, conjunct Mercury. I'm very focused. Yeah, so bring on the questions. That's great. Ask, but it will probably turn out that it's a little more restrictive than you might imagine.
It's kind of good in that way, really. In that way, it's good.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, thank you, everybody. I'll send you the recording tonight. And would it be helpful to you if I sent the? I mean, we're not going to talk about that handout for next week that I haven't created yet until we're actually talking next Monday. Would it be helpful for you to have it a couple days ahead, or is it okay to kind of just glance at it during class for the first time? How's that going for you?
I think ahead, maybe by a day. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, then I will do that. I'll try to do that by Friday, so you can at least everybody can have just a little bit of time. Okay. Good. Yeah. Just wanted to check in. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Keep in touch.
Okay, bye.
Nice.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.